Welcome to this special edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast, an interview with Steve Steinhilber, author of Strategic Alliances, Three Ways to Make Them Work. Hi, I'm Nathan Ives, and I would like to welcome you to this special edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast, an interview with Steve Steinhilber, author of Strategic Alliances, Three Ways to Make Them Work. The Strategy Driven Podcast focuses on the tools and techniques executives and managers can use to improve their organization's alignment and accountability to ultimately achieve superior results. These podcasts elaborate on the best practice and warning flag posts found on the Strategy Driven website at www.strategydriven.com. In this special edition podcast, Steve Steinhilber, Vice President of Strategic Alliances at Cisco, shares with us the key factors in creating long-lasting, profitable partnerships between companies. And so now, without any further delay, let's get started. We are privileged to be joined by Steve Steinhilber, author of Strategic Alliances, Three Ways to Make Them Work, and Vice President of Strategic Alliances at Cisco, where he is responsible for developing new and managing ongoing strategic alliances with top global companies including Hewlett-Packard, IBM, Intel, Microsoft, Motorola, and Nokia. A portfolio valued at more than $4.5 billion in annual revenue for Cisco alone. He is recognized by both business and academia for excellence in alliance leadership. Steve, welcome to the Strategy Driven Podcast.
Thanks, Nathan. It's a pleasure to be with you today, and I look forward to sharing some ideas with you and your listeners on strategic alliances.
Well, I have been looking forward to talking with you. I loved your book, Strategic Alliances, and in several places throughout the book, you noted it was a memo to executives. And I was just amazed at the clarity and the conciseness and how packed this book was with insight, with best practices and tools for folks to go forward. So I am really been looking forward to doing this interview.
Well, thanks, Nathan. That's very kind of you to mention those things. And again, it was written from a practitioner's point of view for a common sense approach toward how to help companies deal with these complex things called strategic alliances.
Steve, to start us off, I was wondering if you could describe for us what a strategic alliance is fundamentally, including some of its key elements.
Sure, Nathan. You know, at its core, strategic alliance is really a relationship, and usually between two companies, but can be across multiple companies.
Okay.
And what brings them together is a common goal, you know, doing things together for customers or for the shareholders that neither company could do it alone.
Okay. There's something also that you mentioned at the outset of your book that I wanted to home in on right up front in our interview, and that is that you talk about a strategic alliance needing to be pursued based on a business need that is driven by an organization's strategic business plan. Could you explain why that is so key and so important?
Strategic alliances need the support really from the highest levels of the organization, and it has to be part of the business strategy because they take significant time and investment to execute successfully. If the chairman or the CEO of a firm don't understand how alliances can help them achieve their business goals, the alliance will be either short-lived and highly focused perhaps on promotional activities but not much on results. And so it's really important for alliance leaders to understand the organization's strategic goals and then find ways to build relationships with other companies that better enable the companies, their company, to accomplish these goals. And in today's world, you know, it's very impossible for companies to do it by themselves. As more and more companies are focusing on what is core to their capability and looking to partner on contextual activities across their value chain. As a quick example, we looked at our strategy in the Japanese market and felt that we were missing some things in terms of our ability, and we saw some significant new opportunities in the growing the Japanese market. And so we looked for a partnership that would bring the complementary capabilities in terms of access and reach to Japanese customers, the ability to provide a broader systems perspective other than just networking equipment, the ability to move forward in a very strong way across our value chain with joint R&D capabilities and go-to-market. And we formed a relationship with Cisco because they were looking for the world leader in networking technology because it was important to their overall systems story that they were building with their customers in Japan, and the ability to help scale their business outside of Japan going forward. So our alliance partnership in this particular case was part of our broader strategy to succeed in the Japanese market. It married the strengths of both organizations to meet what were increasingly changing customer needs about a systems perspective and how technology was delivered. And I'm happy to say the relationship has now gone into its third or fourth year and has added significantly new initiatives because it was really core part of both companies' strategy in that space.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. Now, when you were looking to form that strategic alliance and had to consider the other options, such as building and buying, were there some general circumstances or conditions that led you to say, hey, we want to do an alliance instead of pursuing either a build or a buy?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I think in general, use some rules of thumb to try to describe when building makes sense. Okay. And they really revolve around four things. One is when you're developing or our capability is really core to your ability to sustain value in the marketplace, then you pretty much have to decide that's a space you have to own because it may in the long run affect your profitability in that business. Mm-hmm. When you have the technology or expertise in the company, then it makes sense to build, and you've got sufficient time to complete the development yourself. And if your technology or capability, whether it be service or whatever, is superior to that or it's disruptive to that enabling that's presently existing in the market, in those scenarios, it makes good sense to look at building the capability yourself.
Okay.
If we looking at the buy option, we really look at acquisitions as complements to our build and buy partner strategy. It's like the second tripod of our three-legged stool. And we look at acquisitions if we feel that another company, we simply do not have the technology or skills mix in the company inside Cisco to achieve or go after the market opportunity. We look at acquisitions when we have a timing issue that we might be able to build it, but we're going to miss the window. Market window. And in our business, in the electronics business, the majority of profits accrue to those companies that are number one, two, or three in the market space. And in order to do that, market timing is critical. And so if we feel we're going to miss a window, even if we could build it, we may go ahead and buy because of the market timing issue. And in some cases, we'll look at acquisitions, clearly, that fill out parts of a story that we may have missing gaps, but we have a large piece of the story already. And so in those scenarios, we would look at an acquisition.
Okay. All
partnership,
right.
A little bit different. That's the third level. And we looked at partnerships when we think a partner has a very complementary skill or capability to our own. We don't view that capability as core to what Cisco adds in value. It could be very important to our customer, but context to what we do well. Or it may require a significant entering it or getting that capability may require significant acquisition or barriers to entry that we simply do not want to incur the investment costs on. And we look at partnering when there's an opportunity, frankly, to expand the market opportunity for both companies and create a broader market opportunity as well.
Okay. Now, Steve, in strategic alliances, you had mentioned that about half of all strategic alliances fail. So I was wondering what key factors executives from the potential allying companies should focus on in order to assure that their alliance is a successful one.
We really broke it down into three areas. One is that you have to have the right framework we talked about earlier, the build by partner is one approach to where understanding where alliances fit into your corporate strategy. The second is around you've got to have the right organizational skills to execute the alliance. And these are very critical skills in terms of the innate building, developing, launching, et cetera. And third, you have to be able to build the right relationships with the partner or partners that you're working with, relationships that are built on truly trust in terms of what both company or companies are trying to do. And in the end, that has to be wrapped up in a bow, and much like a Christmas present, and it has to really deliver clear value to the customers that you're seeking to serve via the alliance or the areas of the business that you're looking to reduce costs on or whatever. Without clear value and an understanding of what the companies are doing better together than they could do it alone, you have often alliances on paper, but not in substance.
Okay. All right, I understand. To pursue the relationship piece a little bit more, and trust being so integral and key to forming a successful alliance, are there certain qualities then in a strategic partner that you look for that would help give you a comfort that you'll have that basis in trust?
That's a really good question, Nathan. Yeah, and we look at, you know, a potential partner, we really often ask the same series of questions, and let me share a couple of them with you because they'll give you a quick sense of what we are looking for.
Okay.
First of all, you know, what problem are we trying to solve with our opportunity are we trying to address with this relationship, and can we do it better with a partner or without? And that's kind of a fundamental question. How does the partner fill a hole or solve a need that we can't do as ourselves? Is there how much overlap exists with the company that we might want to partner with versus opportunity? You can often sometimes find the right partner, but because you have overlaps in other areas, that there's not the opportunity to create a broad relationship. And so you might have to go to maybe a second partner who might have less overlap or conflict with other areas of the business. What are their strengths and weaknesses? Do they really do they align with Cisco? And we don't look for every company has its own culture, so what we try not to look for, you never get a culture that's like your own. What we try to assess is do the cultures of the companies, can they fit together, and can we bridge, much like two gears running apart, as they're coming together, they don't have to be the same size wheel, but can we make the gears work together in a way that they can relate and trust each other, given the nature of the differences of the cultural styles? And then finally, you know, given the effort and time that it takes to build these properly, we clearly want to be able to address a opportunity that has significant amount of size and scope to make it worth both companies' efforts.
Okay. Yeah, I can personally relate to the cultural fit one also. I see that in my line of work frequently, where my company has a given corporate culture, and other cultures that we might be working with, they don't blend as well. And then some blend phenomenally well, and the working relationship and the trust is really something then that that blossoms with those relationships. And I find that, you know, I think we're more successful overall.
I would agree. And, you know, when you ask these types of questions, you're never going to get a perfect answer to each question for the one company or companies you're looking at, but what you are trying to do is get enough of the right ones and the right answers to make the appropriate trade-offs.
Yes, yes. Now, Steve, it was a very brief mention in strategic alliances, but I caught a reference where you had noted that Cisco tries to ally with partners or partner companies that are of relatively equal size to Cisco, and on occasion you ally with some smaller firms. I was wondering if there was an importance or what was important about aligning with companies that were relatively of equal size, and then is there some risk if you're a smaller company aligning with a company that's larger?
So I think to answer your first question, the kind of the pros and cons of aligning with a larger company from Cisco's perspective, and then I'll maybe touch on the second one from a smaller company aspect, since I was in two startups and had run alliance or business development functions in those companies as well before I came to Cisco. From Cisco's perspective, what we're looking with the larger company is obviously the ability for them to have to scale to create significant business impact in the relationships that we might build together. The second thing we're often looking for is they bring a breadth of knowledge or they have significant investment in the areas of the value chains that we want to work on together where we're not going to have to place that investment. And so if they don't have significant scale in general to be able to work with a company now the size of Cisco, then it's hard to have a big impact. You know, it may take too long, right, to build that capability.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But the cons, you know, when you work with the bigger companies, and this is why we sometimes mix things up a bit, is that they often can be much slower to move, and that is not indicative of all large companies. There are some that are much faster than others. Okay. And in some cases, you may, because they are so large, you may have to look at this issue of overlap. Are you overlapping in other spaces that could cause you problems in the space you want to build the alliance in to the point where it will never get very strategic? It's more of a tactical deal and simply because there's other areas of conflict that could continue to increase. So those are some of the pros and cons of working with large companies. At Cisco, we often look at some smaller companies to help move the market more quickly because they tend to be more rapid to move. They may have innovation and technology, and by working with them, we can move the market more quickly and in some cases bring some of the larger companies along.
Okay.
From a smaller company perspective, I think, you know, having lived through it and working with bigger companies, I think you need to be very clear what you are looking for and what you're willing to invest. These things called alliances often take more time and resources than people estimate at the beginning of the discussions. And so the biggest danger for a small company is to try to do too many, and the time it takes to do them is not trivial. And so what you really want to do is carefully qualify which companies you want to build those partnerships with, really focus on that, and make sure that you're not spreading yourself too thin, because these big companies can chew up a lot of your resources if you're a smaller company, and you have to be able to make sure that you're not getting spread too thin and really focusing the effort in those spaces.
Okay. But
many companies have made these, small companies have made alliances very successful over the years in a broad range of ways.
All right. Now, Steve, getting back a little bit to what we've talked about earlier, that alliances are fundamentally about relationships. And in strategic alliances, you spent a great deal of time talking about our alliance managers. I was wondering if you could share with our audience what you see are being the key personal traits or qualities that a successful alliance manager should have.
Sure, Nathan. You have to understand that alliance managers have very little a formal power in our organizations.
Okay.
In general. They have to be influencers and brokers, but I don't mean relationship managers. They have to be drivers and creators of change. So the four top traits I think that an alliance manager need would be cross-functional experience. We look at people who have worked from technology to go-to-market, that have understood the value chains and some of the trade-offs across the company, because we often have to work with multiple groups inside our company and those of the partner, and you must understand the perspective for where these functions come from and what they're looking for.
Okay.
You have to have, number two, the ability to synthesize quickly. You need to be able to look at a broad range of information and boil it down and make complex things simple is really important because of the nature of the scope of some of these relationships. Third, I think great communication skills are important, and what I mean by that is you have to be able to communicate from the level of the CEO down to the level of whatever the manufacturing quality engineer, in the plant on a particular issue. And so strong communication skills and being able to focus your communication at the right level to the right people, whatever the problem may be, is important. And last, perhaps, You have to have some very good emotional balance and self-confidence, because you'll be told 100 times why something won't work. And you have to be able to see both sides of a problem, from those of your partner and your company, and then create and shape a solution that oftentimes may not align with some of the people in your own company, and you have to be very balanced in how you're approaching things.
Okay. All right. Now, Steve, do you find that a single individual tends to possess all of these qualities, or do you find that it takes a team of people to actually have all these?
Well, I think if you ever got one who could do all those other things, four things well, you'd probably hire them on the spot. I think that it's very hard to find great traits and of all those capabilities in one person. And you know, that's really the value of having a team where everyone brings their own strengths. Okay. It's important to match people to the different types of alliance work that may need certain skills or quality, and understand that as you're building an alliance team, know your own strengths and capabilities and weaknesses, and do like any other good general manager, you know, bring in people around you that complement you. And so one scenario, you may have someone who's strong on domestic market knowledge and go-to-market skills, but they're weak on the global perspective, and they need help on some of the technology areas. So you very rarely find all these traits in one people. What you look for is strong leaders that can recognize their strengths and weaknesses and build the right team around them.
Okay. All right. And now thinking about a team or the organization in general, I was wondering if you could describe for us what a strategic alliance organization might look like. And I'm thinking about key personnel positions and maybe a general organizational structure.
Sure. We have a team of greater than 150 people around the world working on anywhere from 15 to 20 of our largest partnerships. And so we really break the organization down into three or four things. First of all, we have teams that are responsible for what we call managing, growing, develop, and continuing to expand existing alliances. Mm-hmm. And so those are matured out of the chute. They're operational, and this is about operational scaling, management, and continued innovation, you know, around new initiatives, et cetera. Second, we staff an organization that's both central and distributed around new alliance and ecosystem creation. We find that the skills to build something from new are a little bit different than someone who's managing a large existing and operational alliance. We're looking for people that can create structure, new deals, relationships, and help launch them. And then we create an option for them to either accompany the alliance into the operational scaling part of the organization or transition it out after a period of certain metrics have been met and move back into new alliance formation. So the second major area is around our incubation and formation of new alliance creation. Third is we have a set of horizontal teams that are there, very critical to the operation, that run across the alliances. And we have job families in marketing, alliance marketing, in systems engineering solutions, in operations and reporting and org development, that are kind of our horizontal foundation organizations. And again, they're distributed around the world like our alliance management team is, with our major hubs in United States, Europe, and in Bangalore, India. But these horizontal functions are job families of people who have wanted to make a path in this area, but are very critical to the actual successful execution of the alliances, in addition to the alliance management and business development function. And then finally, what we do is we look at how our alliance strategy links up into the corporate priorities and objectives. And what we do is we form horizontal teams that work across alliances that are aligned with the priorities of the company, who then help drive, based on those priorities, the strategy across the portfolio or the need to form new partnerships across the portfolio, so that whatever we're doing, we're making sure that it's aligned to Cisco's top priorities and bets, and where partnerships in the build-by-partner model makes sense. So four different organizational functions to some degree in the model that we've set up here at Cisco. And you have to really central versus decentralized, every company is a little different. Okay. And in some cases, it makes sense to decentralize it based on how your company operates. In other cases, it makes sense to keep certain things centralized. And it's really a function of your company structure.
All right. All right. Now, Steve, a lot of our listeners are also, besides being large company managers and executives. Some of them are small to medium-sized company executives. And if they don't have currently internal resources that they would go to help form strategic alliances, but they've found that through their business planning process that, hey, here's one or more strategic alliances that make sense, how would they go about acquiring the capability or the kind of personnel that they would need to go foster those kind of strategic alliances?
Yeah, I'd have to say that in the alliances game, size really doesn't matter as much as the quality of the people and the focus okay. of what you're trying to do. You don't have to be a multi-billion dollar corporation to create an alliance. And as an example in the book, I tell the story of the Habitat for Humanity, a nonprofit organization mm-hmm. that's done just a great job of building alliances with other social service agencies, government departments, church groups, and businesses. And they're brought together to serve the common need of the customers, the families in need. And, they really ramped up their capability skills in the wake of Hurricanes Rita and Katrina when they saw they couldn't meet the customer needs by themselves. And if you ask them, they don't have a large organization to execute this. What is important is they have a clear strategy and focus. When I was with two startups, the business development org, and I had multiple functions reporting to me in both startups, but the alliances team itself was relatively small. We were looking at anywhere between 3 and 4 people in mm-hmm. many cases. But what was important was I had to have absolutely the support of all functions in the company as to what we were doing, because the virtual team was much larger, right, to support the effort okay. across the company, engineering, marketing, sales, et cetera. And I had to make sure that we were focused on doing a few things well, because you don't have the luxury to have large numbers of real strategic alliances, but the ones you have are very, very critical. So I think it's a function of the right skills. You're looking for senior people that have done the job when you're a small company. You're looking for the ability to focus on a few good things and the ability to really get buy-in across the company and execute. You don't have to be a multi-billion dollar company to do alliance as well.
All right. Okay. We've talked now at length about some of the key alliance success factors. Steve, I was wondering if you could kind of briefly outline us for the audience the process a company goes through to form a strategic alliance with another organization.
Sure. In the book, we've really called out, we look at the model we call the alliance lifecycle, much as mm-hmm. For those of you who are in the marketing or product space, we'll have a product lifecycle. And we've actually called out 30 steps to manage a successful alliance, everything from evaluating potential partners to building an exit plan at the end of an alliance. Now, we clearly don't have time to cover them all today, but we categorize these steps along the life cycle, and we use the 6 stages, evaluating, forming, incubating, operating, transitioning, / retiring. And we believe that we've developed best practices on each of those areas. And if you think of it like a product life cycle, you want to develop and launch the alliance. You want to make sure it's focused on an initial market opportunity. You want to innovate and continue to extend the life cycle of the alliance with new initiatives and capabilities. And then when it makes sense, and when it could be 2 years, it could be 25 years, you want to make sure you understand when the alliance is no longer being effective and understand how to best operationally retire it in a way that does not create bad feelings between either company, and most importantly, protects the customers and capabilities you've built together.
Okay. All right. Steve, for our last question, as I read strategic alliances, there were so many of the tools and the best practices that I saw in there that struck me as maybe being applicable to other areas of the business, whether it would be mergers and acquisitions or just even ongoing day-to-day business operations. Do you find that people do use these tools in other areas of their businesses?
Yeah, I think you can use it. Some of the things are very common. We work closely with our M&A team, right? So, mm-hmm. for example, when you make a decision to go after a market opportunity, does an acquisition make more sense? Is the cost of the acquisition worth it versus a partner option, right? So some of the tools, as we look at evaluating potential partners, or they could be acquisitions depending upon their size and scope and or acquiring a smaller company or partnering with a large one. And so the dynamic between those two is very important, as you often can make a better decision if you're working closely together with your M&A or BD team. We've even created hybrid opportunities where we may have, through the investment team, put significant investment in a relationship or create a new entity around the relationship with the other company. And this investment can be obviously capital and what we're developing together, people, intellectual property. And so in many cases, some of the tools of understanding what the goal of the company is, aligning where build buy makes more sense and partner, et cetera, and the tools that we're building around alliance evaluation and capabilities, many of them are more effective if they're integrated closely with some of the other options in the build by partner tool.
Okay. Well, Steve, I wanted to thank you not only for the time that you've shared with us, but also just the wonderful insights that you've had and have provided our audience on strategic alliances. And I think it's important to mention to our audience as well that we've only barely covered the tip of the iceberg with respect to your book, because we've, for time constraint reasons, have had to skip things like the alliance portfolio management and, as you had mentioned briefly in the interview, the end of the alliance life cycle, which has both of which have separate chapters within the book. But I've thoroughly enjoyed strategic alliances. I got a lot of value and learned a lot, not just from your examples, but the 30 best practices for strategic alliances that you have in the book, all of the discussions, the tools. I particularly liked a lot of the tools like the strategic map, the governance framework, the decision map, and the operational plan. So I want to thank you again, and I'm going to encourage all of our listeners to go out and pick up a copy of Strategic Alliances for themselves so that they can benefit from the book as I have.
Well, Nathan, thank you very much. You clearly have absorbed. You may have to write the next one yourself based on your level of knowledge and depth here you just went through. So I thank you for the opportunity today. Also, just a one plug is that any profits from the book will go to the Cisco Foundation, which is set up to help people in need. So, again, hopefully if they're reading the book, they'll also know that part of their money is being spent for something that will benefit other people as well.
Thank you for mentioning that. I will also put that on our website as well. And so our listeners then can not only have a quick link so that they can get a copy of the book, but then they'll know that the proceeds will go to the Cisco Foundation. So thank you.
Thank you, Nathan. It's been a pleasure today, and I appreciate very much the opportunity to talk to you and your listeners.
Thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoyed this special edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast. I would like to personally thank Steve Steinhilber for being with us today and sharing his insights on developing and managing strategic alliances. And as a special note, please remember that profits from the sale of strategic alliances go to the Cisco Foundation to provide those less fortunate with improved access to basic human needs, education, and economic opportunities. As always, we would appreciate receiving your feedback by email at podcast@strategydriven.com. If you enjoyed the show, please consider voting for us on Podcast Alley and visiting our website at www.strategydriven.com. Until next time, so long.